The following podcast is a production of Institutional Real Estate Incorporated. Before beginning our program, we would like to invite you to sign up for a free trial subscription to one of our publications at irei.com. Whether you are interested in real estate, infrastructure, or real assets in general, IREI has a publication to suit your needs. Select Publications on the main menu to choose a publication. Interested in more than one? Sign up for them all.
I'm Mike Consul.
And I'm Loretta Klotfelter.
Welcome to Inside the Edition. We are here to talk about the May 2019 edition. Loretta and I getting on the phone together to talk about a highlight or two. And in the May 2019 issue of Institutional Real Estate America, the big feature was the megastorm era. That's the headline anyway. It was subtitled with the question, you know, why the real estate industry is dragging its heels on pricing weather risk and what can be done about it. It was written by regular contributor Alex Frew McMillan, a regular contributor to our magazines. And this was a global feature that appeared in, not just in the Americas magazine, but also Institutional Real Estate Europe and Institutional Real Estate Asia Pacific. Loretta, you were one of the editors that tackled this one. What about this topic? Where did it come from? Why this topic and why all three editions with it?
So the topics of climate change, sustainability have been pretty important in the industry for a while. And, you know, we can argue about the climate science, although it's looking like the scientific consensus is pretty set. But, you know, so much of what we've talked about in the past about ESG has been focused on, you know, what can we do with property to avert or prevent or mitigate, you know, the risks of some sort of climate change global warming event. And, you know, I think time has passed now, and I think the conversation needs to change. And so, you know, it's time to start talking about how properties need to be, better priced to accept the risk that climate change is coming. And in particular, what we wanted to talk about was, it's quite clear. We've entered an era of global megastorms. You know, the oceans are warmer, and, you know, even a small increase in ocean temperatures means for wetter, more powerful storms. And so you can see that, you know, the last 5 years have been the hottest on record, and we are looking at just global devastation. You know, the hurricanes, typhoons, you know, we're hitting record rainfalls, we're seeing flooding, we're seeing costs, and as investors in real estate, you know, it's really important to start thinking about your portfolio resilience. It's really important to start thinking about what properties you're choosing, where they're located, and how to mitigate the risks of a changing climate.
Are we seeing any of that yet, just in terms of investors or portfolios, say, in Miami and other coastal areas, price adjustments going on now? Is that already starting,
you know,
or how is the real estate?
A little bit. You know, I think it's so, for instance, there was a study from the University of Colorado at Boulder and Pennsylvania State University. It found that assets exposed to sea level rise are already selling at a 7% discount to comparable, less exposed assets. So, you know, I think the market is beginning to price this in, but I think in particular, people need to be aware of how much this will be priced in the future. And by pricing it in, you know, the two big issues with how the industry is pricing this risk is thinking about the future costs that weather-related events are going to have. And those are probably going to be come in two key places. One, higher insurance costs, and I think that's pretty self-explanatory. If your risk of flooding is increased, your flood insurance will cost more. The other is in higher taxes, because we're going to see some increased public expenditures to handle the infrastructure needed to mitigate and deal with some of these events. So, you know, improved seawalls, you know, city infrastructure are going to have to be upgraded and expanded, and that cost is going to get passed on. And so, you know, that's another issue to really be watching. And, you know, I think we're at sort of this inflection point where not everyone is thinking about these future operating costs when they are making their investment decisions, but there could be a time where you won't be able to sell one of these properties for what you got into it, you know, or what you expected to get out of it at the end, because these risks will then be priced in at some point. And I think those are the risks you're looking at. Now, one thing to keep in mind, you know, is we're talking about portfolio resilience. That's a concept that GRESB, which has been one of the leading sort of benchmarking groups around measuring sustainability for both real estate and infrastructure. Portfolio resilience is an issue that they're really talking about right now. That's something that they think is really a thing that investors need to be looking at. Another bit of advice, you know, another tactic is not just to think about a building that is well prepared for a climate or weather related event, but whole cities, whole markets that are well prepared. You know, some places are doing a better job of preparing or are better situated than others. You mentioned Miami. I would be cautious in Miami with an investment decision, just because of the there's gonna be a lot required there.
And not only from the standpoint that it's a city along with New Orleans and some others. In fact, I saw a report today that I forget how many decades and three or five decades New York City could actually be at least partially submerged. So in the case of waterfront cities, it's not just that the water is going to rise, or at least is expected to rise. It's also that certainly in the case of Miami, and we've seen this in New Orleans, there's some just hellacious storms, very powerful storms that come in off the ocean. As you said, that ocean water is warming, and they say that's like steroids for a hurricane.
Yes, and that's what we're talking about with this megastorm era. We're not talking about, you know, the average sea level rise that could be forecast. We're talking about the storm surge that's going to come with a Category 5 hurricane, which, you know, the entire eastern Gulf Coast are vulnerable from, you know, from Boston to Houston. You're going to be very careful with any sort of oceanfront city. And I'm going to tell you, there are an awful lot of cities on the water, because that's also where economic dynamism has happened for hundreds of years. So, you know, these major cities built around ports, they are vulnerable to storms. That doesn't mean that we're going to have to, you know, move New York to Cleveland. We just have to be aware that it's going to take some element of cost to prepare. And that cost could be, you know, passed on to a property owner. And that's, you know, it's just a matter of pricing in these risks and being prepared. And I think right now, not everyone is pricing in these risks, but, you know, 10 years from now, I think all of this is going to be very, very priced in. And so you need to be very thoughtful.
So another story in the issue is one called, one about sustainable warehouses, and talking about investments in environmentally sound industrial facilities. We'll talk about that a little bit, because I tend to think of a warehouse as concrete block and, you know, steel girders, and they're holding up the rooftop. But we're talking about now environmentally sound. What does that involve?
Right. Well, you know, the thing about warehouses, and you're completely right, you know, ESG, it's much more common to be talking about environmental issues or sustainability issues, these sort of factors, with an office building. building, a retail, apartments, you know, we're pretty well versed in what a LEED certification might mean for one of those properties. But there is also LEED for industrial buildings. And while they are big concrete boxes, we are seeing a trend toward more interest in building them with an eye toward energy efficiency and broader sustainability. You know, and that's being driven by three factors. One is you're just seeing, you know, the institutional investors. They're looking for, they're requiring more ESG in their investments. And so in addition to asking for that in their office and their retail and their apartments, they're also asking for that in their industrial portfolios. The other thing we're seeing is the occupiers, and this is the same thing that's happening in all the other property types. So, you know, the largest corporate occupiers who are you know, filling in these big warehouses, these Fortune 1000 companies in particular, are really looking for sustainable properties in which to occupy. And so, you know, that definitely started in maybe other property types, but we're starting to see that in industrial as well. And finally, increased regulation. We're starting to see, you know, different regulatory standards also applying to industrial properties. You know, California in particular has been kind of out ahead on some of these regulations. So, you know, so California is requiring all properties, including warehouses, to follow these environmental mandates. I would not be surprised to see that move out into other jurisdictions. You know, all of this, I think, just means that while the industrial sector has been a little slower to get in on the sustainability thing, I think we are starting to see that as an inflection point.
So we're also talking, when we talk about warehouses, we're talking about data centers that are enormous users of energy. And I believe these companies, namely Google, Facebook, Apple, and many, many other companies as well that aren't even in the technology arena, they use tremendous amounts of energy. And I do believe that they're under quite a bit of pressure from their environmental groups and their own employees and probably shareholders not to add additional pressure to the fossil fuel industry, but to find a way to do this with the use of renewable energy. And I know they've made some efforts in that direction. Do you have any information as to how big a movement this is or how successful they've been at making the energy they use as much as possible renewable? Because I know some of them made commitments to 100% renewable.
Yes, Google in particular has made 100% renewable commitment, and they claimed, I believe in early 2018, that they had achieved that, but it is important to keep in mind that a big way that they are doing this is through, you know, sort of this efficiency credit process where, you know, you get credit for a wind farm or a solar, you know, solar field that is putting some amount of energy into the grid, even though your property might be, you know, somewhere else. So, you know, there is some fudging, I guess, on this idea of 100% renewable sources because, you know, sometimes these properties aren't right next to a renewable place. Although, I will say one of the big trends that we had seen in data centers, especially in the Pacific Northwest, is locating near hydropower, which is a renewable resource. You know, so water, using water dam. You know, there's a lot of rivers, a lot of water up in the Northwest. It's also relatively cool, which is good because the big cost when we talk about data centers, it's not just running all of the computers, the servers, but it's keeping them cool. So you don't want to be somewhere that is already going to require a lot of air conditioning because, again, these things throw off a lot of heat.